them corrections to Einstein's equations through the wormhole. Currently, most physicists believe that a trip through a black hole would be fatal. However, our understanding of black hole physics is still in its infancy, and this conjecture has never been tested. Assume, for the sake of argument, that a trip through a black hole might be possible, especially a rotating Kerr black hole. Then, any advanced civilization would give serious thought to probing the interior of black holes. Since a trip through a black hole would be a one-way trip, and because of the enormous dangers found near a black hole, an advanced civilization would likely try to locate a nearby stellar black hole and first send a probe through it. Valuable information could be sent back from the probe until it finally crossed the event horizon and all contact was lost. A trip past the event horizon is likely to be quite lethal because of the intense radiation field surrounding it. Light rays falling into a black hole will be blue-shifted and thereby will gain in energy as they get close to the center. Any probe passing near the event horizon would have to be properly shielded against this intense barrage of radiation. In addition, this may destabilize the black hole itself, so that the event horizon would become a singularity, thereby closing the wormhole. The probe would determine precisely how much radiation there is near the event horizon, and whether the wormhole could remain stable in spite of all this energy flux. The data from the probe before it entered the event horizon would have to be radioed back to nearby spaceships. But therein lies another problem. To an observer on one of those spaceships, the probe would seem to be slowing down in time as it got closer to the event horizon. As it entered the event horizon, the probe in fact would seem to be frozen in time. To avoid this problem, probes would have to radio their data a certain distance away from the event horizon, or else even the radio signals would be red-shifted so badly that the data would be unrecognizable. Step 4. Construct a black hole in slow motion. Once the characteristics near the event horizon of black holes are carefully ascertained by probes, the next step might be to actually create a black hole in slow motion for experimental purposes. A Type 3 civilization might try to reproduce the results suggested in Einstein's paper, that black holes can never form from swirling masses of dust and particles. Einstein tried to show that a collection of revolving particles will not reach the Schwarzschild radius by itself, and as a result, black holes were impossible. Swirling masses, by themselves, might not contract to a black hole. But this leaves open the possibility that one may artificially inject new energy and matter slowly into the spinning system, forcing the masses to gradually pass within the Schwarzschild radius. In this way, a civilization could manipulate the formation of a black hole in a controlled way. For example, one can imagine a Type 3 civilization corralling neutron stars, which are about the size of Manhattan, but way more than our sun, and forming a swirling collection of these dead stars. Gravity would gradually bring these stars closer together, but they would never hit the Schwarzschild radius, as Einstein showed. At this point, scientists from this advanced civilization might carefully inject new neutron stars into the mix. This might be enough to tip the balance, causing this swirling mass of neutron material to collapse to within the Schwarzschild radius. As a result, the collection of stars would collapse into a spinning ring, the Kerr black hole. By controlling the speed and radii of the various neutron stars, such a civilization would make the Kerr black hole open up as slowly as it wished. Or an advanced civilization might try to assemble small neutron stars together into a single stationary mass until it reached 3 solar masses in size, which is roughly the Chandrasekhar limit for neutron stars. Beyond this limit, the star would implode into a black hole by its own gravity. An advanced civilization would have to be careful that the creation of a black hole did not set off a supernova-like explosion. The contraction to the black hole would have to be done very gradually and very precisely. Of course, for anyone passing through an event horizon, it is guaranteed to be a one-way trip. But for an advanced civilization facing the certainty of extinction, a one-way trip might be the only alternative. Still, there is the problem of radiation as one passes the event horizon. Light beams that follow us through the event horizon become more energetic as they increase in frequency. This would likely cause a rain of radiation that would be deadly to any astronaut who passed through the event horizon. Any advanced civilization would have to calculate the precise amount of such radiation and build proper shielding to prevent being fried. Last, there is the stability problem. Will the wormhole at the center of the Kerr ring be sufficiently stable to fall completely through? The mathematics of this question are not totally clear, since we would have to use a quantum theory of gravity to do a proper calculation. It may turn out that the Kerr ring is stable under certain very restrictive conditions as matter falls through the wormhole. This issue would have to be carefully resolved using the mathematics of quantum gravity and experiments on the black hole itself. In summary, passage through a black hole would doubtless be a very difficult and dangerous journey. Theoretically, it cannot be ruled out until extensive experimentation is performed and a proper calculation is made of all quantum corrections. Step 5. Create a baby universe. So far, we have assumed that it might be possible to pass through a black hole. Now let's assume the reverse, that black holes are too unstable and too full of lethal radiation. One might then try an even more difficult path, to create a baby universe. The concept of an advanced civilization creating an escape hatch to another universe has intrigued physicists like Alan Guth. Because the inflationary theory is so crucially dependent on the creation of the false vacuum, Guth has wondered if some advanced civilization might artificially create a false vacuum and create a baby universe in the laboratory. At first, the idea of creating a universe seems preposterous. After all, as Guth points out, to create our universe, you would need 10 to the 89th power photons, 10 to the 89th power electrons, 10 to the 89th power positrons, 10 to the 89th power neutrinos, 10 to the 89th power antineutrinos, 10 to the 89th power protons, and 10 to the 89th power neutrons. While this task sounds daunting, Guth reminds us that although the matter-energy content of a universe is quite large, it is balanced by the negative energy derived from gravitation. The total net matter energy may be as little as an ounce. Guth cautions, "Does this mean that the laws of physics truly enable us to create a new universe at will? If we tried to carry out this recipe, unfortunately, we would immediately encounter an annoying snag, since a sphere of false vacuum 10 to the negative 26th power centimeters across has a mass of 1 ounce. Its density is a phenomenal 10 to the 80th power grams per cubic centimeter. If the mass of the entire observed universe were compressed to false vacuum density, it would fit in a volume smaller than an atom. The false vacuum would be the tiny region of space-time where an instability arises and a rift occurs in space-time. It may only take a few ounces of matter within the false vacuum to create a baby universe, but this tiny amount of matter has to be compressed down to an astronomically small distance. There may be still another way to create a baby universe. One might heat up a small region of space to 10 to the 29th power degrees Kelvin, and then rapidly cool it down. At this temperature, it is conjectured that space-time becomes unstable. Tiny bubble universes would begin to form, and a false vacuum might be created. These tiny baby universes, which form all the time but are short-lived, may become real universes at that temperature. This phenomenon is already familiar with ordinary electric fields. For example, if we create a large enough electric field, the virtual electron-anti-electron pairs that constantly pop out in and out of the vacuum can suddenly become real, allowing these particles to spring into existence. Thus, concentrated energy in empty space can transform virtual particles into real ones. Similarly, if we apply enough energy at a single point, it is theorized that virtual baby universes may spring into existence, appearing out of nowhere. Assuming that such an unimaginable density or temperature can be achieved, the formation of a baby universe might look as follows. In our universe, powerful laser beams and particle beams may be used to compress and heat a tiny amount of matter to fantastic energies and temperatures. We would never see the baby universe as it begins to form, since it expands on the other side of the singularity, rather than in our universe. This alternate baby universe would potentially inflate in hyperspace via its own anti-gravity force and bud off our universe. We will therefore never see a new universe is forming on the other side of the singularity, but a wormhole would, like an umbilical cord, connect us with the baby universe. There is a certain amount of danger, however, in creating a universe in an oven. The umbilical cord connecting our universe with the baby universe would eventually evaporate and create Hawking radiation equivalent to a 500 kiloton nuclear explosion, roughly 25 times the energy of the Hiroshima bomb. So there would be a price to pay for creating a new universe in an oven. One last problem with this scenario of creating a false vacuum is that it would be easy for the new universe to simply collapse into a black hole, which we recall we assumed would be lethal. The reason for this is Penrose's theorem, which states that, for a wide variety of scenarios, any large concentration of sufficiently large mass will inevitably collapse into a black hole. Since Einstein's equations are time-reversal invariant, that is, they can be run either forward or backward in time, this means that any matter that falls out of our baby universe can be run backward in time, resulting in a black hole. Thus, one would have to be very careful in constructing the baby universe to avoid the Penrose theorem. Penrose's theorem rests on the assumption that the infalling matter is positive in energy, like the familiar world we see surrounding us. However, the theorem breaks down if we have negative energy or negative matter. Thus, even for the inflationary scenario, we need to obtain negative energy to create a baby universe, just as we would with the transversible wormhole. Step 6. Create huge atom smashers. How can we build a machine capable of leaving our universe, given unlimited access to high technology? At what point can we hope to harness the power of the Planck energy? By the time a civilization has attained Type 3 status, it already has the power to manipulate the Planck energy by definition. Scientists would be able to play with wormholes and assemble enough energy to open holes in space and time. There are several ways in which this might be done by an advanced civilization. As I mentioned earlier, our universe may be a membrane with a parallel universe just a millimeter from ours, floating in hyperspace. If so, then the Large Hadron Collider may detect it within the next several years. By the time we advance to a Type 1 civilization, we might even have the technology to explore the nature of this neighboring universe. So the concept of making contact with a parallel universe may not be such a far-fetched idea. But let us assume the worst case, that the energy at which quantum gravitational effects arise is the Planck energy, which is a quadrillion times greater than the energy of the LHC. To explore the Planck energy, a Type 3 civilization would have to create an atom smasher of stellar proportions. In atom smashers, or particle accelerators, subatomic particles travel down a narrow tube. As energy is injected into the tubing, the particles are accelerated to high energies. If we use huge magnets to bend the particles' path into a large circle, then particles can be accelerated to trillions of electron volts of energy. The greater the radius of the circle, the greater the energy of the beam. The LHC has a diameter of 27 kilometers, which is pushing the limit of the energy available to a Type 0.7 civilization. But for a Type 3 civilization, the possibility opens up of making an atom smasher the size of a solar system, or even a star system. It is conceivable that an advanced civilization might fire a beam of subatomic particles into outer space and accelerate them to the Planck energy. As we recall, with the new generation of laser particle accelerators, within a few decades, physicists might be able to create a tabletop accelerator capable of achieving 200 GeV, 200 billion electron volts, over a distance of a meter. By stacking these tabletop accelerators, one after the other, it is conceivable that one could attain energies at which space-time becomes unstable. If we assume that future accelerators can boost particles only by 200 GeV per meter, which is a conservative assumption, we would need a particle accelerator 10 light-years long to reach the Planck energy. Although this is prohibitively large for any Type 1 or 2 civilization, it is well within the ability of a Type 3 civilization. To build such a gargantuan atom smasher, a Type 3 civilization might either bend the path of the beam into a circle, thereby saving considerable space, or leave the path stretched out in a line that extends well past the nearest star. One might, for example, build an atom smasher that fires subatomic particles along a circular path inside the asteroid belt. You would not need to build an expensive circular piece of tubing, because the vacuum of outer space is better than any vacuum we can create on Earth. But you would have to build huge magnets, placed at regular intervals on distant moons and asteroids in the solar system or in various star systems, which would periodically bend the beam. When the beam comes near a moon or asteroid, huge magnets based on the moon would then yank the beam, changing its direction very slightly. The lunar or asteroid stations would also have to refocus the beam at regular intervals, because the beam would gradually diverge the farther it traveled. As the beam traveled by several moons, it would gradually form the shape of an arc. Eventually, the beam would travel in the approximate shape of a circle. One could also imagine two beams, one traveling clockwise around the solar system, the other counterclockwise. When the two beams collided, the energy released by the matter-antimatter collision would create energies approaching the Planck energy. One can calculate that the magnetic fields necessary to bend such a powerful beam far exceed the technology of today. However, it is conceivable that an advanced civilization could use explosives to send a powerful surge of energy through coils to create a huge magnetic pulse. This titanic burst of magnetic energy could only be released once, since it would likely destroy the coils, so the magnets would have to be rapidly replaced before the particle beam returned for the next pass. Besides the horrendous engineering problems of creating such an atom smasher, there is also the delicate question of whether there is a limit to the energy of a particle beam. Any energetic beam of particles would eventually collide with the photons that make up the 2.7-degree background radiation, and hence lose energy. In theory, this might in fact bleed so much energy from the beam that there would be an ultimate ceiling for the energy one could attain in outer space. This result still has not been checked experimentally. In fact, there are indications that energetic cosmic ray impacts have exceeded this maximum energy, casting doubt on the whole calculation. However, if it is true, then a more expensive modification of the apparatus would be required. First, one might enclose the entire beam in a vacuum tubing with shielding to keep out the 2.7-degree background radiation. or if the experiment is done in the far future, it is possible that the background radiation will be small enough so that it no longer matters. Step 7. Create implosion mechanisms. One could also imagine a second device based on laser beams and an implosion mechanism. In nature, tremendous temperatures and pressures are attained by the implosion method, as when a dying star collapses suddenly under the force of gravity. This is possible because gravity is only attractive, not repulsive, and hence the collapse takes place uniformly, so the star is compressed evenly to incredible densities. This implosion method is very difficult to recreate on planet Earth. Hydrogen bombs, for example, have to be designed like a Swiss watch so that lithium deuteride, the active ingredient of a hydrogen bomb, is compressed to tens of millions of degrees to attain Lawson's criteria, at which the fusion process kicks in. This is done by detonating an atomic bomb next to the lithium deuteride, and then focusing the X-ray radiation evenly on the surface of a piece of lithium deuteride. This process, however, can only release energy explosively, not in a controlled fashion. On Earth, attempts to use magnetism to compress hydrogen-rich gas have failed, mainly because magnetism does not compress gas uniformly. Because we have never seen a monopole in nature, magnetic fields are dipolar, like Earth's magnetic field. As a result, they are horribly non-uniform. Using them to squeeze gas is like trying to squeeze a balloon. Whenever you squeeze one end, the other end of the balloon bulges out. Another way of controlling fusion might be to use a battery of laser beams arranged along the surface of a sphere so that the beams are fired radially onto a tiny pellet of lithium deuteride at the center. For example, at the Livermore National Laboratory, there is a powerful laser fusion device used to simulate nuclear weapons. It fires a series of laser beams horizontally down a tunnel. Then, mirrors based at the end of the tunnel carefully reflect each beam so that the beams are directed radially onto a tiny pellet. The surface of the pellet is immediately vaporized, causing the pellet to implode and creating huge temperatures. In this fashion, fusion has actually been seen inside the pellet, although the machine consumes more energy than it creates, and hence is not commercially viable. Similarly, one can envision a Type 3 civilization building large banks of laser beams on asteroids and moons of various star systems. This battery of lasers would then fire at once, releasing a series of powerful beams that converge at a single point, creating temperatures at which space and time become unstable. In principle, there is no theoretical limit to the amount of energy that one can place on a laser beam. However, there are practical problems with creating extremely high-powered lasers. One of the main problems is the stability of lasing material, which will often overheat and crack at high energies. This can be remedied by driving the laser beam by an explosion that occurs only once, such as nuclear detonations. The purpose of firing this spherical bank of laser beams is to heat a chamber so that the false vacuum is created inside, or to implode and compress a set of plates to create negative energy via the Casimir effect. To create such a negative energy device, one would need to compress a set of spherical plates to within the Planck length, which is 10 to the negative 33rd power centimeters. Because the distance separating atoms is 10 to the negative 8th power centimeters, and the distance separating the protons and neutrons in the nucleus is 10 to the negative 13th power centimeters, you see that the compression of these plates must be enormous. Because the total wattage that one can amass on a laser beam is essentially unlimited, the main problem is to create an apparatus that is stable enough to survive this enormous compression. Since the Casimir effect creates a net attraction between the plates, we will also have to add charges to the plates to prevent them from collapsing. In principle, a wormhole will develop within the spherical shells, connecting our dying universe with a much younger, much hotter universe. Step 8. Build a warp drive machine. One key element necessary to assemble the devices just described is the ability to travel across vast interstellar distances. One possible way to do so is to use the Alcubierre warp drive machine, a machine first proposed by physicist Miguel Alcubierre in 1994. A warp drive machine does not alter the topology of space by punching a hole and leaping into hyperspace. It simply shrinks the space in front of you while expanding the space behind you. Think of walking across a carpet to reach a table. Instead of walking on the carpet, you could lasso the table and slowly drag it toward you, making the carpet bunch up in front of you. Thus, you have moved little. Instead, the space in front of you has shrunk. Recall that space itself can expand faster than the speed of light, since no net information is being transferred by expanding empty space. Similarly, it may be possible to travel faster than the speed of light by shrinking space faster than the speed of light. In effect, when traveling to a nearby star, we may barely leave Earth at all. We would simply collapse the space in front of us and expand the space behind us. Instead of traveling to Alpha Centauri, the nearest star, we are bringing Alpha Centauri to us. Alcubierre showed that this is a viable solution of Einstein's equations, meaning that it falls within the laws of physics. But there is a price to pay. You would have to employ large quantities of both negative and positive energy to power your starship. Positive energy could be used to compress the space in front of you, and negative energy to lengthen the distance behind you. To use the Casimir effect to create this negative energy, the plates would have to be separated by the Planck distance, 10 to the negative 33rd power centimeters, too small to be achieved by ordinary means. To build such a starship, you would need to construct a large sphere and place the passengers inside. On the sides of the bubble, you would put a band of negative energy along the equator. The passengers inside the bubble would never move, but the space in front of the bubble would shrink faster than light, so that when the passengers left the bubble, they would have reached a nearby star. In his original article, Alcubierre mentioned that his solution might not only take us to the stars, it might make possible time travel as well. 2 years later, physicist Alan E. Everett showed that if one had two such starships, time travel would be possible by applying warp drive in succession. As Princeton physicist Gott says, "Thus it appears that Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, was indeed right to include all those time travel episodes." But a later analysis by the Russian physicist Sergei Krasnikov revealed a technical defect in the solution. He showed that the inside of the starship is disconnected from the space outside the ship, so that messages cannot cross the boundary. That is, once inside the ship, you cannot change the path of the starship. The path has to be laid out before the trip is made. This is disappointing. In other words, you simply cannot spin a dial and set a course for the nearest star. But it does mean that such a theoretical starship could be a railway to the stars, an interstellar system in which the starships leave at regular intervals. One could, for example, build this railway by first using conventional rockets that travel at sublight speed to build rail stations at regular intervals between stars. Then the starship would travel between these stations at superlight speed according to a timetable, with fixed departures and arrivals. Gott writes, "A future supercivilization might want to lay down warp drive paths among stars for starships to traverse, just as it might establish wormhole links among stars. A network of warp drive paths might even be easier to create than one made up of wormholes, because warp drives would require only an alteration of existing space, rather than the establishment of new holes connecting distant regions." But precisely because such a starship must travel within the existing universe, it cannot be used to leave the universe. Nevertheless, the Alcubierre drive could help to construct a device to escape the universe. Such a starship might be useful, for example, in creating the colliding cosmic strings mentioned by Gott, which might take an advanced civilization back into its own past, when its universe was much warmer. Step 9. Use negative energy from squeezed states. In Chapter 5, I mentioned that laser beams can create squeezed states, which can be used to generate negative matter, which in turn can be used to open up and stabilize wormholes. When a powerful laser pulse hits a special optical material, it creates pairs of photons in its wake. These photons alternately enhance and suppress the quantum fluctuations found in the vacuum, giving both positive and negative energy pulses. The sum of these two energy pulses always averages to a positive energy, so that we do not violate known laws of physics. In 1978, physicist Lawrence Ford at Tufts University proved three laws that such negative energy must obey, and they have been the subject of intense research ever since. First, Ford found that the amount of negative energy in a pulse is inversely related to its spatial and temporal extent. That is, the stronger the negative energy pulse, the shorter its duration. So if we create a large burst of negative energy with a laser to open up a wormhole, it can only last for an extremely short period of time. Second, a negative pulse is always followed by a positive energy pulse of larger magnitude, so the sum is still positive. Third, the longer the interval between these two pulses, the larger the positive pulse must be. Under these general laws, one can quantify the conditions under which a laser or Casimir plates can produce negative energy. First, one might try to separate the negative energy pulse from the subsequent positive energy pulse by shining a laser beam into a box and having a shutter close immediately after the negative energy pulse enters. As a result, only the negative energy pulse would have entered the box. In principle, huge amounts of negative energy can be extracted in this way, followed by an even larger positive energy pulse, which is kept out of the box by the shutter. The interval between the two pulses can be quite long as the energy of the positive pulse is large. In theory, this seems to be an ideal way in which to generate unlimited quantities of negative energy for a time machine or wormhole. Unfortunately, there is a catch. The very act of closing the shutter creates a second positive energy pulse inside the box. Unless extraordinary precautions are taken, the negative energy pulse is wiped out. This will remain a technological feat for an advanced civilization to solve. To split off a powerful negative energy pulse from the subsequent positive energy pulse without having a secondary pulse wipe out the negative energy one. These three laws can be applied to the Casimir effect. If we produce a wormhole that is 1 meter in size, we must have negative energy concentrated in a band no more than 10 to the negative 22nd power meters, a millionth of the size of a proton. Once again, only an extremely advanced civilization might be able to create the technology necessary to manipulate these incredibly small distances or incredibly tiny time intervals. Step 10. Wait for quantum transitions. As we said in Chapter 10, intelligent beings facing the gradual cooling of their universe may have to think more slowly and hibernate for long periods of time. This process of slowing the rate of thinking could continue for trillions upon trillions of years, enough time for quantum events to happen. Normally, we can dismiss the spontaneous creation of bubble universes and transitions to other quantum universes because they would be such extremely rare events. However, in Stage 5, intelligent beings may think so slowly that such quantum events could become relatively commonplace. In their own subjective time, their rate of thinking might appear to them to be perfectly normal, even though the actual time scale would be so long that quantum events become a normal occurrence. If so, such beings would only have to wait until wormholes appear and quantum transitions occur in order to escape into another universe. Although such beings might see quantum transitions as commonplace, one problem here is that these quantum events are totally unpredictable. It would be difficult to make the transition to another universe when one doesn't know precisely when the gateway might open or where it would lead. These beings might have to seize the opportunity to leave the universe as soon as a wormhole opened up, before they had a chance to fully analyze its properties. Step 11. The Last Hope. Assume for the moment that all future experiments with wormholes and black holes face a seemingly insurmountable problem, that the only stable wormholes are microscopic to subatomic in size. Assume also that an actual trip through a wormhole may place unacceptable stresses on our bodies, even within a protective vessel. Any number of challenges, such as intense tidal forces, radiation fields, incoming falling debris, would prove lethal. If that is the case, future intelligent life in our universe would have but one remaining option: to inject enough information into a new universe to recreate our civilization on the other side of the wormhole. In nature, when living organisms are faced with a hostile environment, they sometimes devise ingenious methods to survive. Some mammals hibernate. Some fish and frogs have antifreeze-like chemicals circulating in their bodily fluids that allow them to be frozen alive. Fungi evade extinction by transforming into spores. Similarly, human beings might have to find a way to alter their physical existence to survive the trip to another universe. Think of the oak tree, which scatters tiny seeds in all directions. The seeds are A, small, resilient, and compact. B, they contain the entire DNA content of the tree. C, they are designed to travel a certain distance away from the mother tree. D, they contain enough food to begin the process of regeneration in a distant land. E, they take root by consuming nutrients and energy from the soil and living off the new land. Similarly, a civilization could try to mimic nature by sending its seed through a wormhole, using the most advanced nanotechnology available billions of years from now to copy each of these important properties. As Stephen Hawking has said, it seems that quantum theory allows time travel on a microscopic basis. If Hawking is right, members of an advanced civilization could decide to alter their physical being into something that would survive the arduous journey back in time or to another universe, merging carbon with silicon and reducing their consciousness down to pure information. In the final analysis, our carbon-based bodies may well be too fragile to endure the physical hardship of a journey of this magnitude. Far in the future, we may be able to merge our consciousness with our robot creations, using advanced DNA engineering, nanotechnology, and robotics. This may sound bizarre by today's standards, but a civilization billions to trillions of years in the future might find it the only way to survive. They might need to merge their brains and personalities directly into machines. This could be done in several ways. One could create a sophisticated software program that was able to duplicate all our thinking processes so that it had a personality identical to ours. More ambitious is the program advocated by Hans Moravec of Carnegie Mellon University. He claims that in the far future we may be able to reproduce, neuron for neuron, the architecture of our brains onto silicon transistors. Each neural connection in the brain would be replaced by a corresponding transistor that would duplicate the neuron's function inside a robot. Because the tidal forces and radiation fields would likely be intense, future civilizations would have to carry the absolute minimum of fuel, shielding, and nutrients necessary to recreate our species on the other side of a wormhole. Using nanotechnology, it might be possible to send microscopic chains across the wormhole inside a device no wider than a cell. If the wormhole was very small, on the scale of an atom, scientists would have to send large nanotubes made of individual atoms, encoded with vast quantities of information sufficient to recreate the entire species on the other side. If the wormhole was only the size of a subatomic particle, scientists would have to devise a way to send nuclei across the wormhole that would grab electrons on the other side and reconstruct themselves into atoms and molecules. If a wormhole was even smaller than that, perhaps laser beams made of X-rays or gamma rays of small wavelength could be used to send sophisticated codes through the wormhole, giving instructions on how to reconstruct civilization on the other side. The goal of such a transmission would be to construct a microscopic nanobot on the other side of the wormhole, whose mission would be to find a suitable environment in which to regenerate our civilization. Because it would be constructed on an atomic scale, it would not need huge booster rockets or a large amount of fuel to find a suitable planet. In fact, it could effortlessly approach light speed because it is relatively easy to send subatomic particles to near light speed using electric fields. Also, it would not need life support or other clumsy pieces of hardware, since the main content of the nanobot is the pure information necessary to regenerate the race. Once the nanobot had found a new planet, it would create a large factory using the raw materials already available on the planet to build many replicas of itself and make a large cloning laboratory. The necessary DNA sequences could be produced in this laboratory and then injected into cells to begin the process of regenerating whole organisms and eventually the entire species. These cells in the lab would then be grown into fully adult beings, with the memory and personality of the original human placed into the brain. In some sense, this process would be similar to injecting our DNA, the total information content of a Type 3 civilization or beyond, into an egg cell containing the genetic instructions capable of recreating an embryo on the other side. The fertilized egg would be compact, sturdy, and mobile, yet would contain the entire body of information necessary to recreate a Type 3 civilization. A typical human cell contains only 30,000 genes, arranged on 3 billion DNA base pairs, but this concise piece of information is sufficient to recreate an entire human being, utilizing resources found outside the sperm, the nourishment provided by the mother. Similarly, the cosmic egg would consist of the totality of information necessary to regenerate an advanced civilization. The resources to do this, raw materials, solvents, metals, and so forth, would be found on the other side. In this way, an advanced civilization, such as a Type 3 Q, might be able to use their formidable technology to send enough information, about 10 to the 24th power bits of information, across a wormhole sufficient to recreate their civilization on the other side. Let me emphasize that every step I've mentioned in this process is so far beyond today's capability that it must read like science fiction. But billions of years into the future, for a Type 3 Q civilization facing extinction, it may be the only possible path to salvation. Certainly, there is nothing in the laws of physics or biology to prevent this from occurring. My point is that the ultimate death of our universe may not necessarily mean the death of intelligence. Of course, if the ability to transfer intelligence from one universe to another is possible, it leaves open the possibility that a life form from another universe, facing its own big freeze, could try to burrow into some distant part of our own universe, where it is warmer and more hospitable. In other words, The unified field theory, instead of being a useless but elegant curiosity, may ultimately provide the blueprint for the survival of intelligent life in the universe.
Chapter 12. Beyond the Multiverse.
The Bible teaches us how